We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
Broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios, presented to you by your local Hyundai dealers. You're listening to Chicago's number one sports station. 670 The Score is Chicago Sports. Chicago Sports is The Score. An Odyssey station. WSCR and HD Chicago. WBMX HD2 Chicago. The Score! Mully and Hall.
Fantastic show.
Chicago sports talk for your morning.
Oh, man, I really wanted to talk to him.
Appreciate the love, big homie.
With Rodon, I don't think he's going to end up being the ace of this staff, but he sure has pitched like one his first two times out. He has been dominant last time. It's hard to be better than he was against the Indians. He sees the same lineup tonight. The Sox need that after a bad outing from Lucas Giolito. I think Kevin came after me calling up and saying that, you know, you wouldn't see that out of Shane Bieber, what Lucas Giolito did. Good pitchers, great pitchers have bad outings, Molly. They do. Sure. I'm not being dismissive of that. But, hey, Shane Bieber, he did not look good in the playoff game. I mean, he had a bad outing. You have to go back to 2019 before you have a clunker of an outing like Lucas Giolito delivered last night. But there was a time where he didn't get out of the second inning against the Yankees. All I'm saying is that it happens. You try not to overreact to it. It's early in the season, and Lucas Giolito, that has been the exception, not the rule. So everything's going to be okay with Lucas Giolito, I think.
And David, listen, it's happened to both Kyle Hendricks and Lucas Giolito. It's pretty amusing or horrific that it happened a day apart for those two guys. That doesn't change their status on the team, other than in Dustin's mind. Kyle Hendricks is still the ace of the staff. He had to separate from the team because he was ill and they didn't know if it was COVID-19. We talked to Tommy Hotovy about it. We're not making excuses, but it was a different type of thing. Lucas Giolito, we talked about this ridiculous time frame thing with him and the fact that you had a guy starting at 10-10 on his body clock when the reality is that he prefers things at night, whatever it might be. I don't care why each of the guys had a meltdown. It happened, and the next time they're on the bump, you move on from it.
Mike Mulligan and David Hall taking you up to 9 o'clock on 670 The Score.
Okay, let's go.
Mully and Hall, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Ah, what a winning day. What a glorious morning in the fine city of Chicago. We are inching ever closer to fans in the stands, David.
Morning, Molly. Happy Wednesday. Yeah, we are. It sounds like we are taking a step in that direction. We can definitely talk about that. I think some people get a little excited about the United Center maybe opening its doors. But it sounds like you enjoyed Tough Guy Tuesday. That's what it was, right?
Tough Guy Tuesday. I like it. Yeah. I thought things went pretty well. I thought the baseball on both sides of town was pretty good, and I enjoyed some of the boom goes the dynamite, particularly with the White Sox hitting, what did they hit, four homers in that game, coupled by Abreu.
How about
good
that?
Good to see Jose Abreu starting his season. And the Cubs with the 3-1 win, toughing it out. Jake Arrieta not affected by the weather.
Not at all. I think, first of all, it was nice to see Abreu respond to guys like you calling him out for not hitting so far. I think that was a welcome move by him. Didn't you call him out yesterday? Didn't you say he wasn't hitting, but he would eventually? And
I don't think there, that's calling him out. I mean, okay. I'm not sure that I went
maybe
so
not
far as to say, you and me, behind center field. We're going to settle this.
Yeah, okay. Maybe I exaggerate a tad. But you know what? Didn't you just know, we talked about it, that Arrieta was going to go out to the mound on a 38-degree night, sleeveless, tough guy Tuesday, and deliver a performance that was what you kind of expected from him. It wasn't great. It wasn't bad. He toughed it out. And then switching back and forth between that and the Sox game, which got a little bit of a head start on the Cubs. That was nice that they staggered the starts that way. Carlos Rodon, he grinded his way through after the no-hitter. This was a very different outing, but effective nonetheless.
Yeah, you knew it was going to be different when he walked the leadoff batter, because that meant no perfect game.
Yeah.
And he had a few walks in the first few innings, and then allowed a home run. So he did get hit. He can be hit. I think I set the over under at kind of 4-hit game. Well, it was a 3-hit game, but he did walk 5. And the Sox were walking guys all night, and they were kicking the ball around a little bit.
Yeah.
But none of it mattered, because, David, boom goes the dynamite.
Yeah, that's a dangerous lineup, as Tim Anderson called it, with Jose Abreu hitting, and he is. And he was the designated hitter last night, which is an interesting look. Their lineup had an interesting beginning and adjustment midway through the game. We will get to all that. But this White Sox team, you know, when they hit like they can – and they get just enough out of their starting pitching, you know, defensively, they can overcome those mistakes if you hit like they did. That was nice to see and fun. And a big outing for Rodon, because I think that, you know, following up a no-hitter is difficult to know what to expect. They talked about it throughout the broadcast, but he was, you know, he's 3-0. Molly, this is a great start for Carlos Rodon. His ERA is still under 1. This was a big outing for him and nice to see.
You know, I totally agree with that. And I think, again, it wasn't a night where he had everything going, but it was a night where he could kind of grind it out. And I think that was that's another key milestone in his return to previous form, or his comeback from injury, or whatever way you want to put it. I'm not sure he could grind it out in that fashion a year ago. And it was great to see him out there battling and just getting, you know, getting the work done and putting in a really solid veteran outing in a game they needed it. And obviously in a game where he didn't have his best stuff.
And I think that's where he relied upon, you know, the confidence, the experience. And you wonder if he just reared back and reached down and got some of that resolve that he was on display during the no-hitter. And, you know, the no-hitter, it defines your career, sort of. And you wonder if on nights like last night, when you need to, you know, get something to get you through a tough time, you know, that's what you rely upon. You pull that in the right direction, and that's what Carlos Rodon was able to do. And the White Sox, you know, they did kind of need that.
Same two teams later today. We do not know who will start for the Chicago White Sox. They have not named a starter, probably an opener, but we're not sure yet how they're going to line it up, who's going to be there. Adam Eaton is facing a 1-game suspension for what happened last week, where he felt he got kicked off the second base and he shoved a few people, and that led to a dugout clearance and everybody milling around, and you're not supposed to be milling around. So he gets a 1-game suspension, which he's appealing. There's a fine involved, which we don't know how much that is, but he appealed it yesterday, so we should know fairly quickly when he has to sit down. But he will have.
That's ridiculous. I mean, we'll talk about it. Yeah. I'm not quite sure what's going on here, because did these kind of skirmishes result in suspensions in the past? Because this was, the benches cleared, but there were no fisticuffs. There wasn't anything really that rose to the level of being over the line. So Adam Eaton is intense, and he knocked a guy who invaded his space, and they had a little bit of an exchange. But did that really rise to the level of a suspension?
I thought that it would be a fine, like when we found out that that Wilson Contreras was fined. That seemed to be more appropriate to me. I think we said he'd be fined. I don't think we thought that he would be suspended for a game. But, I mean, Major League Baseball, in their wisdom, who knows? But they do not. They have not named a starter for today's game. We do know that Zach Davies will be going for the Cubs, and we know that Jacob DeGrom got on his horse and ran when he saw the way the Cubs were playing. He wants no part of that team.
No.
They're waiting for Washington. Okay, coward. That's fine, DeGrom.
He's dodging Sogard and company. Yeah, how dare he?
Yeah, the coward. I mean, what else can you say? The guy just doesn't have the stones to play the Cubs. It's that simple.
That must be it. Oh, what a break for the Cubs. What a disappointment. If you were counting on going Thursday to see DeGrom pitch against the Cubs, and that was the draw, because let's face it, that's as big of a draw as the way the Cubs have been playing lately. And then you find out he's, you know, moved back to Friday. Kind of a letdown.
Well, I understand kind of a letdown, but, I mean, I think – number one, you get to go to a ball game, which is a rarity in these days. So you still have to be fired up about it. Number two, you're not going to see the Mets pitcher shut down the Cubs. You want to go see the Cubs win, right? If you're going to a game in Chicago,
I suppose. I
really don't think it's the same thing as LeBron failing to play when Cleveland comes to town.
It's great for the Cubs. Absolutely, it's a break. But baseball fan, don't you want to see the best on your local stage? Don't you want to see one of the best pitchers in baseball if you have an opportunity to, every chance that you can? Come on now.
No, and a double no on that. If I'm going to a game, I want my team to win.
No.
I'm out there to celebrate. If that guy, you know, I'll be honest with you. Go put in the AAA team. Okay.
Oh, please.
Well, they've got 17 injuries. Oh, well, that's really too bad. Who are these guys? Who cares? Beat them.
No. I save the understudy. I don't want to see them.
Do you know anything about baseball? It's root.
No.
Root for the home team. Okay. Sing the song.
Okay.
Don't you listen to the song?
Yeah.
If they don't win, it's a shame.
I can root for the home team, but I want the home team to succeed after beating the best. And the best is Jacob DeGrom. And now that he's not pitching Thursday, I feel a little let down from a baseball fan's perspective, not being able to see that.
Yeah,
I think if
you're selling a league based on superstars like the NBA does, and you go out, you buy a ticket because you're a fan, not of the other team, but of a certain player. And boy, I can't wait to see Steph Curry play. And then he's not there, and you've just splashed for courtside tickets. Okay, get embittered. But the reality is that you want the team to win. The team that you support, you hope they win. And anything that aids that is I am okay with, especially in baseball. Probably in football, too.
You're the guy that wanted Blaine Gabbert to play instead of Tom Brady when the Bucks came to play the Bears on Thursday Night Football, right? You're the guy that wanted...
Was I wrong? I mean, come on.
No, they beat Tom Brady. You know why? They could always have that moment because he's the GOAT. They beat the GOAT, and that's a memory. You don't remember beating Blaine Gabbert.
I disagree. I think they played Blaine Gabbert in that game, if I recall, especially at the end. Poor Blaine Gabbert lost track of – yeah, exactly. Yeah, down and distance. What is it, Blaine? I'm gonna. Where's Tom? The Bulls are at the Cavs tonight. The Bulls – They're winning, right? They're on a minor, kind of mild winning streak. They suddenly have agreed. Apparently, had a secret team meeting, and agreed to play defense, which is just astounding. Hey, I've got an idea here. Theoretically, what do you say we all try to defend someone?
This is what we're going to do. We're going to stop watching Zach do what Zach does because Zach's not here. And you know what we should do in the meantime? Use our spare time to slap the floor, get in a defensive stance, and let's get after it. And that's what they've been doing. So more power to them. They are now clinging, Mully, to that 10th seed.
Yeah, there are two teams ready to pass them. I think is Washington now the bigger threat than Toronto? They're both a threat behind them.
No.
So, yeah, they've got to win this game.
They're not ready to pass them.
You have to beat the Cavs.
You do.
Because there are two teams breathing down your neck. And you know, listen, I'm not going to make light of it, but I believe, if I'm not mistaken, that the Blackhawks have their own issues too. They've got teams breathing down their necks. They've got a Predators team that they can't beat, which is kind of a problem since they're ahead of you and you got to beat them. And you've already just lost to them the other night. And, yeah, by the way, the Stars have passed them too. So you got two more with them later. You're pretty much in a win-or-else scenario for the next couple games.
Last night was a fun night to watch Chicago baseball because you had Arrieta and Rodon, the Sox and the Cubs. Tonight is a big night. Big night for both the Bulls and the Blackhawks because of the playoff implications. The Bulls have to continue. You can't lose to the Cavs and expect anybody to take your playoff hopes seriously. And the Blackhawks have to beat the Predators, something they haven't done all season long. They've got to keep it simple. They've got to do whatever they need to do to kind of keep those playoff hopes are slipping away because of the Stars, because they can't beat the Preds, and it's an opportunity tonight they need to take advantage of.
All sorts of new mock drafts are out, all sorts of mocking of the Bears and their situation. Did you see Pete Prisco suggested that they take the Stanford quarterback number 20, use their first-round pick, the guy that would probably be there in the second round, because guess what? You're a desperate team with no quarterback, so overdraft a quarterback. Well, look, there's going to be quarterbacks overdrafted throughout the draft, right? And there's rumors about the number 4 pick. There's rumors of the Bears trying to move up in the top 10, in the top 5, in the top 10. These are rumors, and the problem, of course, is assets. And do you have enough? How do you make that? Well, you'd have to go into next year's draft and maybe the year after, and it's just crazy.
So it's Friday morning after the draft, next Friday morning, and we are evaluating whether the Bears, and we're trying to make sense of the Bears taking Davis Mills with the 20th overall selection out of Stanford, the quarterback who would be a reach at number 20 and overdrafted at number 20. What would you say?
I mean, I think the whole thing stinks of desperation to begin with.
It does.
And I think I would say, wow, they really were desperate, weren't they? I don't know what else I would say. I don't know how else to evaluate it.
But of all the mock drafts, wasn't that the most and I think Prisco's he's compelling, he's interesting. We both have dealt with him for a long time.
Sure.
That's a reach. That's a big reach.
Oh, I mean,
outrageous.
Beyond reach. I mean, if you know, you can't trade down to, you know, 6, 7, 8 spots early second round. You can't get something for overdrafting a guy. Usually that's kind of the way you play it, right? So I don't know. I don't know what to make of it. I was amused by it because I know Pete, and I could hear his voice as I was reading his comments. And it's always fun when you know someone and you know their tongue is kind of firmly in cheek, even though they're taking a shot. It's amusing. I enjoyed it, frankly. But
it was fun. And he got the reaction he was looking for because,
right.
Look, we're reacting to it. Absolutely.
Oh, of course. Yeah, you got to. All right, we've got so many things to react to and so many people to go after, and we'll do that starting in the 5 at 5. It's Mully and Haw on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station. It's 5 at 5 with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top 5 sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. 5 at 5 with Mully and Haw starts now.
Carlos Rodon threw more than 100 pitches one start after his 114-pitch effort in his no-hitter. Given Rodon's injury history, was that wise to extend him that much, especially given the situation with Lance Lynn? Out of an abundance of caution, should the Sox consider skipping a start and getting in front of any potential issues?
Look, unfortunately, these games keep going, and time keeps marching on, and they haven't even started the minor league season. They're still working on getting guys prepared out at the out at Schaumburg for the White Sox, South Bend for the Cubs. So, no, I don't think you can. I think you've got I think you got issues in the rotation already. Lance Lynn is out, and you don't have anyone to start this game. You're going to probably go with an opener and do a bullpen game today. And again, it's one of those, what do you call it, get over 500 days. We know how those things go for the White Sox, so you can't be overly optimistic. You need your starting pitching. You need these guys to take the ball. Maybe what they're trying to do is to build him up by having him go 100 pitches a game. I don't think you can get ahead of I don't think abundance of caution comes into play. I think you've got to let guys pitch until they can't pitch and then bring up people and replace them if indeed you need to do so. So skipping a start for me is not in the cards.
Yeah, I think that might be going a little far, although I was surprised, and I'm not sure if you were or not, but I think after you throw 114 and you do it under the circumstances that Carlos Rodon did in the no-hitter, you come out yesterday, and I know he struggled with walks, and that was something that was evident from the first batter. I guess I was mildly surprised that they let him go 110. I don't think that had to be the plan, unless you're trying to get him to the point where you think that he's going to be a 100-pitch guy every time out. To me, for Carlos Rodon, just given his history, I don't know that, you know, he doesn't have Lance Lynn's durability. I don't know that, and I say that with a touch of irony because Lance Lynn is the guy who's getting skipped, but at the same time, I don't know that I went into the season thinking that this was going to be Carlos Rodon's role as workhorse, so I suppose that would be overreacting and maybe overly cautious. I do think you want to keep an eye on him. I'm a little surprised, Mully. I think that you have identified Jonathan Stever as a guy that is somebody to keep an eye on, and I think he's a good prospect. They brought him up to be the 27th guy for the doubleheader, and I wondered if he would be slotted into today's spot start. Maybe it'll be Alex McRae, who started a game for them last year. He is now been brought up as Zach Birdie went to Schaumburg basically to rest in a swap out of pitchers. But I guess that Rodon was needed last night to go as deep as he did. I suppose that skipping him would be a luxury you can't necessarily afford. But I do think that it bears watching his pitch count without overreacting. You don't want him to get tired early in the season. You don't want him to wear him out. It's a long year. He started out great. Let's keep it going, but let's not overdo it.
I think it's really interesting, and you guys are making me think this morning, which is always a good thing. Mully, I think it's cool that might be the thing. They might be trying to create a Lance Lynn-type guy in Carlos Rodon and work him up and get him to that. Like, we want to see 90 to 100 every time you go out, regardless of if that's 5.5, 6, 8, no matter how many innings it is, we want to try to get that many pitches out of the guy. Now, listen, if he has a rough start next time out, or God forbid he gets injured next time out, that's going to be low-hanging fruit, and we're going to point back to these 200-plus efforts by him. But the bullpen, knowing that today they didn't have a starter, and the bullpen wasn't exactly great when they did take Rodon out last night, they needed him. And to your guys' point, I mean, all these games count and they keep coming fast and furious. There is no time off. There is no day off. So they needed that win. And I think it's early in the season, but you needed a win like that in the division to show that, hey, we were here on paper. Everybody thought we were going to be here. And now we are here in the flesh and we're on the road. That's not a place. They haven't had a ton of success out in Cleveland, right? That's a place that they have struggled over the last 5 or 6 seasons. So that was a good win for everybody. So, I don't think skipping a start makes any sense at all, unless they were completely healthy, which they are not right now.
I think that's a great topic, great question to kind of think through.
After Jake Arrieta's stellar, sleeveless 5-inning outing on a 38-degree night at Wrigley Field, in a game the Cubs really needed, is it time to agree with Dustin and deem Jake the staff ace, even if it's a temporary designation? How long can this consistency last? How surprised are you?
Well, I'm surprised that I'm agreeing with Dustin. Is that the question? I don't know that I'm fully there yet. Here's the thing with Jake Arrieta. First of all, much credit to the way that he has started this season. He's now 3-1, ERA is 2.86. This is a guy that has prepared himself to put him in this position to succeed early. And you know, he does look like at flashes and glimpses of the guy that you remember fondly as a Cubs fan, the guy that was not at the top of his game the way he was in 15 and 16 and 17. This is a guy that certainly is getting by on experience and know-how, and certainly there's some guts involved. And you loved it. I loved it when he came out at 38 degrees and he looked like the offensive lineman in the temperatures that are in the teens on a Bears Sunday without any sort of undershirt, and he's sleeveless and he's just going after hitters. Five innings, okay? He went five. And that was what you expect from a guy who is in the middle of your rotation and should be. Here's the thing. I probably do agree with Dustin right now, this far into the season or this early in the season, he is your ace. But he's only started four games, I believe, five games. And he can't be your ace if you're going to be a team that wants to contend. So he's the de facto ace right now because I think he's been the best of the bunch, but he can't be for the Cubs to get where they want to go. So right now, yeah, credit to him. He's 3-1, good start, but I'm not ready to anoint him the ace because I don't want to acknowledge that the Cubs are going to be that mediocre of a pitching staff. I think for them to be above average, Kyle Hendricks has got to be that guy.
I got a lot of time for Jake Arrieta. I got a lot of time for sleevelessness on a 38-degree night. And I do enjoy watching him sort of recapture some of the lost glory. But if he is the ace of the staff, that means that Kyle Hendricks has had a terrible year, because that's the ace of the staff. That's the guy nominally. That's the guy you open the season with. That's the guy that is the returning player, not returning from a stint elsewhere. But Jake may once have been the ace of the staff. If he is the ace of the staff now, if Dustin is correct, that is a really bad sign for the Cubs, because you need your best players to be your best players, and Kyle Hendricks needs to be their best pitcher in order for them to be the team that they hope to be and to challenge for the division and make the playoffs again. So you want to give him you want to deem him the ace, that's fine. It is a temporary designation, ace until Kyle Hendricks returns or gets better. Not surprised that he's done pretty well for himself. He's an experienced player. I will be surprised if we get to the end of the year and we're still calling him the ace of the staff.
Well, here's something we can all agree on, that yes, Kyle Hendricks needs to be the ace of the staff if the Cubs hope to get somewhere that they don't look like they're going. He's being paid like an ace. He deserved to get the ball on opening day, but he has scuffled so far. I mean, I'm surprised that Jake Arrieta, I mean, some of us, I think I'll be the one, I'll say, I didn't think Jake would be the second starter. I thought that was going to be Zach Davies, and Zach Davies has stunk out loud so far. So now, if Jake can continue to do what he's done, and Hendricks can get back into top of the rotation, first guy in a must-win game, playoff starter, then all of a sudden you got something going on the north side. But can Hendricks get there, and can Jake continue to do what he's doing? Those are things that we're going to have to keep an eye on, and I absolutely love anybody who wears shorts. You never wear long sleeves to play sports. Absolutely. You don't wear long jerseys, and you don't wear long sleeves. No.
As a big sports fan, I love the question.
How do you feel about Mayor Lori Lightfoot saying yesterday that she believes before the season is over, there will be fans at the United Center? Aren't we running out of time with each team left with just seven home games? Does the mayor know something about the playoffs that isn't apparent to us now?
Yeah, I mean, maybe the only way they get fans in the stands is by making a deep playoff run. I don't know. You know, the mayor was good in what she had to say. I thought, I agreed with her that, you know, you want to be having this conversation when the numbers are going down and we're not there yet. But, they have a good plan. I think the problem that you have is either two other teams maybe in the NBA that don't have fans in the stands other than the Bulls, and maybe only one in the NHL other than the Blackhawks. So it's really difficult to look at that and think that that there's an equitable situation, but we're being cautious and careful, and we're following the science in Chicago. You're running out of games quickly. I mean, with seven dates left, are we talking about, does it count if the last two games or the last game of the season, you get some people in to applaud for you? Yeah, I don't know that either team's making the playoffs, frankly, and maybe we'll learn more about that tonight, but the fact of the matter is that I don't know how many games you're actually talking about here. If we wait until May, I mean, that's, you know, what do you got, 2-3 games at the end of the year where you can get some people to mill around at the stadium, and just doesn't seem like there's – I think we're running out of time quickly.
Yeah, but she dares you to tell her she's wrong, Molly. She
never said that.
I know where she's coming from. I know where the mayor wants to go with this conversation, and it is wise to be cautious and to let the science sort of dictate this. I wouldn't be compelled or persuaded by what's going on in with the rest of the teams in the NBA or the NHL, the Blackhawks being the last U.S.-based team to let fans in. Every municipality, every city, every stadium is going to have its own set of numbers to follow and its own leaders to listen to. And I think that it's conceivable, I suppose, that they could make a decision in the next week or so, even if there are only 3 or 4 games left on the home schedule for the respective teams, to let them in. You look at what Rockford is doing now that the Hawks are, you know, affiliated with Rockford. Obviously, they're going to let fans in for their final 3 games of the regular season. So it doesn't seem worth it by some token. Some people may look at that, but at the same time, every game that they let fans through the door, I think, is estimated a potential $1 million. So that's nothing to sneeze at. And I think that's why, even if it is only a couple of games at the end, maybe they do it as an ode to 2021, the season that wasn't, they couldn't have here. I think they probably are motivated for a lot of reasons to open the doors, even if it is for a couple games. But I do think that caution is the way to go here, and I applaud them being as tentative as they have been in opening the doors, because we're not talking about an outdoor venue like Guaranteed Rate Field or Wrigley Field. This is indoors, so you want to be cautious. So this is the right way to go, and you shouldn't be persuaded by what other teams around the league are doing.
I would imagine that the Wirtz family and the Reinsdorf family are pushing for this to happen, especially since it's happening in lots of other places. But what are the stipulation for the fan, for any of the three of us to go? What would we have to have had? Do we have to have a laminated vaccination card? Do you have to have one shot? Do you have to show? Is that part of how you would gain entrance into the United Center? Is that so? There's so many questions that are unanswered. Have there been any cases where it has spread at all inside an arena? I'm guessing no, because I think we would have heard about it. If let's just say in Detroit, if there were fans at Red Wing games and Piston games, and there was an outbreak or somebody had gotten sick, is that data would be available, and that would say, oh, wait, let's tap the brakes. But if there hasn't been that, I think, again, you open up the United Center, that doesn't mean fans have to show up. It's then up to the fans to decide whether or not they want to buy that ticket to go in. Now, maybe in a half-kidding way, Lori Lightfoot, as a big fan of sports as she is, says, listen, Blackhawks, Bulls, make the playoffs, and I'll open up the building. Otherwise, we'll see you next year. And I'm half kidding, but maybe that's a plan that she could put in place. But in all seriousness, what are the requirements in order to get into the building? And should there be requirements? Should you have to be fully vaccinated in order to go in this limited capacity? I think that's something that has to be considered. I'm not saying it's black and white, but I think it could be something to take into account.
I think all teams in all leagues of every sport is probably had that conversation, Dustin. I don't think that I'm aware of any that have put that stipulation upon entry. Do you know, Molly? Because I don't think that I'm not sure that anybody has the capability to measure that yet, or to have, right, you know, the technology where, okay, show me your vaccination proof on your phone or in your wallet. I'm not sure we're there yet, even though that might be where people end up going.
There's been talk about doing that with like a travel passport. Have you heard that? That sort of thing. But that's pretty far down the road, right? I mean, we don't have that going yet. And I believe I saw the other day that half the male population of the country, I don't know why it was limited to male, but adult males, half of them have had one shot. So that's a good sign. And hopefully we get to a point where there could be herd immunity. But I mean, other than taking someone's temperature, what the hell can you do at the actual gates?
Well, I think you probably could show proof, because last week, remember when we talked to Brian Cole, we referenced the Bills have decided to, but the Bills aren't going to have a game until August. Right. So they have all these weeks and months to kind of prepare from a technological standpoint, and also just to agree on what passes as verification that you've been vaccinated. So these are things that I think, when you have the benefit of time, that frankly the Hawks and the Bulls just don't have right now.
You know, I'm glad you asked that question.
With just over a week until the NFL draft, can the Bears afford to stay at number 20? Can they afford to move up? How far? Are they stuck in the draft's no man's land?
Just an aside, why is my visceral reaction, why is our reaction sometimes when we hear that cut, when we hear Ryan Pace's voice, to chuckle? I mean, that's really not the response you want, is it? You want, you know, you hear the general manager of the Bears and all of a sudden, oh, you're amused because, doesn't that sound silly?
He never talks. And then when he does, he basically says things like, oh, you guys can respect that I can't talk right now. It's literally the man says nothing.
I think that's part of it. Okay, so we are kind of – I'm loving our draft segments at 7:20. Today we're looking at running backs. I think it's fun to count down to the draft. And this time of year is something that you start to formulate what the plan should be for the team that you follow. And with the Bears, I want to stay consistent here. I don't want them to move up. If they do move up and they end up with Justin Fields or Trey Lance, let's see what they give up to move up. I don't trust Ryan Pace, and I don't think he should be empowered to do that, even though, okay, you got a general manager, you have to let him do his job. That's an argument we can have. That's a debate that is valid. But if I am his boss, I am discouraging him from that temptation. I want you to stay at 20, where you can get a starter week one guy. If you don't stay at 20, you move back to get three picks in the first two rounds. I want you to take this approach where you don't have to, don't go for the style, go for the substance. The style would be moving up and making a splash with the quarterback that would buy you some time, but I wouldn't trust it. What I would trust, if you draft a cornerback, you draft an offensive tackle, maybe a wide receiver, but within the first two picks, you get a quarterback maybe to develop in the second round, and or a guy that you can start on week one in the first round, or if not, move back and get three players that you can envision being starters. But beyond that I don't think the plan makes a lot of sense to me, because of what has happened in the past has maybe scarred me from being aggressive this draft. So I think my plan going in is at 20. It may not be sexy, but it could be a solid pick for you.
Okay, so, you know, I understand how antiquated the Jimmy Johnson draft evaluation chart is when you start figuring out trades, that you know, Jimmy has come out and said that thing needs to be redone. But he put this together as a way of figuring out the value of picks and how to move up. And if you look at the chart, let's say the number four pick in the draft, which right. Atlanta has, which might be for sale, that would mean you would move up from pick 20 to pick number four, and it would cost you you'd get the fourth quarterback in the draft, by the way, but it would cost you, I believe the 20th pick is worth 850 points and the fourth pick is worth 1800. The other rule is if you trade in next year's number one, it has the value of a number two, because you don't know. You would give the value of the next year's, you know, 33rd pick, because you don't know where the team is picking and you don't know how much better they'd get and all the rest of it. Just generally speaking, you give up a round ahead from 1 year to move into this draft. So if you're trading 850 at number 20, you would have to give up a number one pick, next year's number one pick, maybe a two this year, maybe a pair of threes. So you got to think about that, man. You got to think about the cost and the lack of assets that you have to begin with, and then taking that away for next year. All right, the number 8 pick in the draft, let's say you want to get just into the top 10. That's worth $1,400. Your number one remains $850. You got to make up 650 points. That's roughly 2 number one picks to get into the top 10, the bottom of the top 10. Your pick this year, next year's number one, and you'd need a sweetener too. So it's too much. It's too much. You don't have the assets. You don't have any extra picks, excuse me. Nor do you have anybody to trade. You don't have any piece that you don't need that you could give up because you have an embarrassment of riches at a position.
Molly, that's great information, and that's good research. I want to ask you this before we get to Dustin, pause for a second. So you looked up what it would take to go up to number 4, and that is the big swing. That's the home run swing. What about the story yesterday where the Giants and Dave Gettleman are rumored to be considering moving back from 11? They don't need a quarterback. They've got Daniel Jones. Moving from 20 to 11 would seem to be easier to do and not cost as much. Would that be something that you, when you do the math, would you think that would be more worth it? Or are you like me and you're like, okay, that still seems like a bit far to go and to give a lot to give up for a definite maybe?
You know, you could give up your first two picks of this draft and maybe get up there, right? Because I think that would be a $1,250 and an $850. So you give your number one pick and then you give your second round pick. I think the problem is we can sit here and rattle off 4 or 5 positions the Bears need. And when we're talking about the quarterback, it's a guy that sits on the bench and learns. It's not a play right now quarterback. And if we're talking about getting up to 12, now you're talking about probably the 5th quarterback in the draft. Maybe those guys are gone. And so you'd have to have that agreement in place and be willing to do it on the day of the draft. The problem, I think, is, you know, one of the problems is going to be if you are willing to move up, then you're going to have to make some phone calls. You're going to have to – apparently they've already called and they've talked to different teams about what they might do. Once you do that, your offer is in their hip pocket. And it's great to say, well, we all respect each other and all the rest. They're going to shop your pick elsewhere. Hey, they're willing to give up this. What can you throw in as a sweetener that would be different than that? So now you're paying through the nose. Yep. I'm telling you, they do not – own enough assets to get them into that part of the draft. They don't. The top 10, you know, maybe right outside the top 10. It's hard to move up even 9 slots. It really is, because there are demands at the position that you want to take, and it's quarterback would be the only reason to get on your horse. I think you're better off, honest to God, you're better off trading down. They're in a no man's land in the draft. That is not like the meat of the draft. If that was like, oh, everybody wants to get to 20 because you're going to get a value guy, you're not sure what's going to be there. And I don't think teams kind of earmark, I got to get that third edge rusher. Boy, do I need the second cornerback. It's just going to be a difficult spot to be sitting in a draft and thinking that you're not going to pay through the nose to move up. So you're better off trying to move down. Again, I don't know what you'd get to move down, but if you could get more, you could fill more of these positions that they have to have. Their problem is they have too many needs and not enough picks, and they don't have the assets to be able to acquire picks. You're not going to trade Roquan. Somebody texted Roquan Smith. That's great. The problem with that is then how do you replace Roquan? You got to go draft another linebacker? How are we going to get a pick to do that? I'm telling you, they are really in a terrible position given the desperation. And the desperation is what you saw with Russell Wilson, the fact that they're making these phone calls already. It's not even the week of the draft, and they're not moving anywhere.
I totally agree that they are in the no man's land territory. And we've been talking this week and a little bit at the end of last week about how some of these signings, these guys to one-year deals, have created cover for them. But I think there's very few positions, other than maybe the position that you guys did yesterday on your preview, interior defensive lineman, that the Bears couldn't use an upgrade at. It may be tight end. I think that would be a stretch. And I mean, there's no way the kid from Florida is going to get all the way down to 20 and you're not going to trade up to go get him. But otherwise, they need one of everything. And they don't have enough, Mully, to your point, the resources to get one of everything. What we don't know is behind the scenes at Halas Hall, how confident are Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy in their future with the Bears? Because everybody is saying that next year's quarterback class is absolutely dreadful as far as coming out. So everybody now is overpaying. We've got five guys going in the first round, and then two more guys going early in the second round. One of those mock drafts, Mully, you talked about in the first segment of the show, had the kid from Stanford going to the Bears at the 52nd pick. Right? That now that maybe that makes sense if he was still around.
That makes more sense.
Yeah. Right. But so then the question becomes, if you think that your jobs are in jeopardy, you need to give Andy Dalton probably something else on offense. You need to give him another asset, another weapon, I believe. Or you're just gonna take the best player available at any of the five positions that you need help in. Now, the only good news is that all these other positions, they're gonna drop, right? They're coming to you as you're at that no man's land, and I agree, spot in the draft. But with quarterbacks in such high demand, there's two offensive tackles that probably won't be there when the Bears pick. So that's seven guys. We've got the tight end from Florida. That's eight guys. And of course, there's the elite wide receivers. But so you start coming down, and I think wide receiver might make the most sense, right? Like there's going to be the Bears could sit at 20, and there's going to be a really good wide receiver to add to that mix. And I think the Bears are in a situation where they got to give Andy Dalton another toy, another weapon to work with, somebody else for Matt Nagy to scheme with. So I think that's what makes the most sense to me. I would be shocked if they didn't take wide receiver, assuming there's not a run before 20. But I think one of the top four wide receivers would still be available in this year's draft to the Bears at number 20, and that's what makes the most sense.
That's a good question, David.
Why can't the Blackhawks beat the Nashville Predators now at 0-4-2 on the season? Must they do it now or never tonight? Is there any category above must win that applies to this game? Is it an elimination, season-altering, future-determining game?
I don't know what the term is. I really honestly don't. And I'm going to get out of the way here and let David tell you exactly why they can't beat Nashville. But I would say that that's kind of a problem if you want to overtake a team. Now, I get it. Your game at home here is kind of the season. It feels like an elimination game. Feels like you had to beat them two of these three games, and you still have to, and you lost the first one. But I don't – I need – it's beyond must win. It's – you know, this is effectively an elimination game, although technically it isn't, so that doesn't work. We need another category. We're going to need another category.
that's good. Let's do that tomorrow. We'll have a quorum. We'll vote on it. We'll have another category. They've got to win tonight. This is as big as it gets for a regular season game. It is April. You do have some hockey left, but it's really hard to envision a scenario where they make the playoffs. And I guess maybe it's progress that we're talking about this in terms of making the playoffs even being a possibility for the Blackhawks in this season that began so dreadfully, and you expected things to go a lot differently. But they teased us, and now I want more. I want them to get to the playoffs with this young team that has played eight rookies, and I think they are a little bit ahead of schedule where we thought they would be. You got to protect the puck. You got to get out of your own end. You cannot give up these cheapy goals that where your defense has breakdowns. You've got to do things that you do against the other teams when you're playing well and consistently. You've got to be responsible, and then you got to give somebody like an Alex DeBrincat stepping forward, or maybe Patrick Kane. This would be a nice night for him to come and do what he does. Showtime is ready to, you know, pull the curtain back. So I just, you know, the Predators, they are the team that beats the Blackhawks because they don't make mistakes. And the Hawks make too many. And that's got to change tonight. And hopefully, I'm very curious to see who's going to be in goal. I do not, or if it is Lankinen, how patient Jeremy Colleton is, who pulled Lankinen the other night for Subban in a move that surprised a lot of people. But tonight, this is as big as it gets. I'm looking forward to it.
maybe for a new term, it's be able to take, get ready to take the wife and kids on that family vacation time. If you don't win this game, get ready to schedule the fishing trip, or get ready to make a tee time if you don't win this game. This is, as it stands right now, for the verbiage that I like to use, this is absolutely positively the dreaded must-win statement game for the Blackhawks tonight. And really, it's going to be a juggling act trying to figure out how to take in all of our Chicago sports tonight, right? Like, how are we breaking this all up? You don't have enough TVs and apps and devices to take all of this in, and all of it is worth watching and taking a look at. There's a question for every single one of our teams, and I guess we're fortunate that we have all these teams to watch. But for the Blackhawks, if you're not going to watch tonight, like, there may not be a reason to watch until they take the ice again next year. So I think you got to spend some time with the Blackhawks tonight. Yes, Dave.
And what a great point, Dustin. A year ago at this time, we were anticipating The Last Dance episodes 3 and 4. Tonight, we're choosing which of the four games is going to hold our interest the most. What a night.
Yeah, how many times will we see Mully in The Last Dance? That was what we were looking for, right?
All righty, 312-644-6767 is the number. What do you think? Are they overusing Carlos Rodon? Do we have to worry about that? Or do you get as much out of that arm while you can? Is he getting stronger? Maybe, just maybe, he's getting stronger with every pitch, and that'll carry on to the end of the year. Is Jake Arrieta the ace? Is that your guy? Do you believe that? Or do you think Kyle Hendricks? Maybe. Is it possible that Zach Davies takes control of that? No, that's not going to happen tonight. But it's possible. No, it isn't. All right. Don't argue with yourself. What about the draft? What the heck are the Bears going to do? Do they move up? Do they do down? Do they move down? What do they do? Somebody tell us why the Hawks can't beat the Predators. There's got to be some little thing you do, and then all of a sudden you just maybe bring back the captain. 312-644-6767. Mully and Haw on the score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode and catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.